Hello, everyone, and welcome to another edition of the Massive Match Day podcast. We are presented, as always, by our dear friends at the Land Grant Brewing Company in Franklinton and the Old North Arcade over on High Street in Old North. Old North just got some exciting news. They got permission to expand again, so they're going to be putting in a bunch of new stuff, a bunch of new games, and more bathrooms, which is always a good thing to have. So definitely stay tuned to their Facebook page for more updates on that. They are a spectacular place to go hang out and even take in a crew game if it's an away game and you don't have anywhere else to go. Very much worth checking out. My name is Chris Landis. I am back with you this week. Filling in for me last week was Josh, and this man, I'm getting ready to bring in Nathaniel Marhefka. They did a fine job. Nate, how you feeling?
Well, I just got done watching a little bit of RSL in preparation to talk about them today. So got all the inside scoops. And Chris, it's nice to have you back on here. Josh and I missed you, of course, last week. And thanks for doing the intro. I had to cover for you, and so I have no idea how it went. So our sponsors may quit on us.
Nah, they're not going to quit on us. I did forget to like prep you guys for the intro. So, but Matt Goschert never prepped me for taking this over, so I'm just continuing the tradition. But no, you guys did a great job last week. The show was awesome, and catching up on Real Salt Lake is probably a lot more fun than how I've spent my last couple days. I had a root canal yesterday, so if I sound a little woozy or out of it, it's because I'm on the good stuff. So apologies, listeners. Still less painful than the crew match yesterday. Today we're recording this on Thursday. By the time you hear this, it'll be 2 days ago. But I had a root canal that morning, then watched that crew match that night. That was a painful day for me in general. Not a lot went right for Crew SC on Wednesday night. You know, am I crazy for thinking that they still were in this match even after the first red card when it was still 1-0? Because I kind of think they were still in this match, Nate.
Were they?
What? I kind of think they were. They could have. They were creating a couple of chances. They were reacting well to going down a man. Zach saving the penalty was pretty huge. There was a bit of a lift, and you know, Ola Kamara doesn't hit the post three times. Kakuta Mane gets more than a limp-footed shot off. This could easily be 1-1, and at 1-1. They might hold on, and you know, things might go very differently. I'm not usually the Sunshine Brigade type, but I kind of feel like even with the two red cards, or even at least with the first red card, it was still an opportunity to get out of there with a point last night. What do you think?
Yeah, there was a possibility, I guess, and you know, that's always going to be the case. Even down a man, it can happen. We saw New York City FC over the weekend take out Chicago. Granted, it was at home, but you know, they were down a man for 78 minutes, managed to score two goals and win that one 2-1. So, you know, it was totally possible for a crew to come back, but you know, clearly getting that second red card totally changes the match, you know?
Yeah, it was a gut punch. You know, it obviously ended up being a very bad night at Chester for Crew SC. 3-0 scoreline's never good. Losing two men to red cards is never good. What was more concerning for you, the defensive issues or the fact that they didn't really get anything going offensively, you know, with the exception of Ola Kamara hitting the post, what was it, two or three times, and the one effort from Kakuta Mane, there was no real offensive impetus. There was a lot of buildup, as we've come to expect, you know, some good possession, some good buildup, but without Federico Higuain out there, there was really no attacking impetus. I wrote about it a bit for the Six Thought Box that just went up this afternoon. But are you more concerned by those attacking failures considering they were down two defenders, you know, or are we down two defenders because the defending was going poorly, I guess is the question.
Yeah, well, even before the first red card, I thought that the attack really just wasn't there for Columbus. And I think it's kind of been an issue overall with this 3-4-2-1 setup when Higuain's not been in the mix. Mm-hmm. You know, this formation, it plays out pretty similarly to the 4-2-3-1 we're used to seeing from Berhalter because of the adaptive nature of his 4-2-3-1. It gives a similar look when they are in the attack. But, in this match, it was kind of curious because, you know, Alex Crenali, I always say his name wrong. Oh, he had some struggles kind of bringing the ball out of the back, I thought, in his distribution early on in the game. And in order to, you know, help fix that a bit, Will Trapp started dropping back a bit further. I don't know if you noticed, but he started being a bit more active in the early build-up and playing balls out of the back to a point where you had two guys basically playing the same position, you know, in the same 5-10 yards of space, and then the two center backs were kind of split wide. And from there, like, based on sheer numbers, it's really hard with that setup to generate any type of attacks. If you're going with three defenders, you want Will Trapp in the center of the field, you know, trying to get in between defenders, trying to cut inside the defensive lines of Philadelphia. You don't want him back trying to support and build up. And I think, you know, I've seen like a Guardiola team do like a 3-man in the back and have Xabi Alonso, you know, take a role in the center of defense during build up to help facilitate the attack. But in those instances, they had like David Alaba, who would then join the attack and basically be an attacking midfielder coming from the center back position. But in Berhalter setup, you don't have that. You don't have that total freedom. And Lalas and Jonathan really aren't those guys either. Maybe a Nico Nace could do that a little bit better. But it really led to the stagnant attack. And for me, that was a big issue because it seemed, you know, their plan, at least initially, was to actually play a little bit more long balls, play in the counter. And it wasn't working. And that was their backup plan. And I didn't really like it. So it put more pressure on the defense then. And then you have Will Trapp dropping back a little bit more, and you're essentially absorbing that pressure. Sorry for this long rant. I'm going on for minutes, but, you know, that's just kind of how I saw the game. And even without the red cards, I didn't really like what I saw. Chris, do you agree with any of that? Sorry for the long form, but...
No. Long form is what people tune into us for. Some podcasts have all the funnies. Other podcasts have the long form. We are one of the long forms. So no need to apologize. Yeah, I definitely agree. I think that was definitely became more apparent as that first half went on. They were struggling to build, and let's be serious. Or be clear here, Artur has got a crazy high work rate. The guy covers a ton of ground, but if you're asking him to play two central midfield positions so Trapp can go back and help out the center backs, it's just not gonna work.
Sure.
My biggest concern with this formation lacking Federico Higuain was this was the time for the Justin Meerham show. We have been effusive in our praise for Justin Meerham this year, and understandably so. He was so hot to start the year. But last night, and I saw a tweet from, I believe it was Andrew Erickson, who said Meerham was struggling for fitness after the game on Saturday or something along those lines. I don't want to put words at his mouth, but it was something along those lines, and that's why he came out so early, and perhaps
he played a full 90 in the first match.
Did.
So I think that substitution was probably pre-planned by Berhalter. He was probably fully expecting to make that change.
Yeah, but my concern is more with how ghost-like he was for the majority of that match. Now, it could have been due to fatigue. It could have been due to playing primarily on the right side as opposed to the left. He and Kakuta Mane had kind of swapped from what we had seen previously. But Justin Meerham's played on the right. Justin Meerham has played through the center.
Right.
And if Justin Meerham is not going to be the guy when Federico Higuain is out in any formation, where's it going to come from? And that was my big concern, because going into it, I'm like, all right, this is going to be the Justin Meerham show. We may see, you know, a real performance tonight. And it just didn't happen. And I think more than anything, that's what kind of doomed the black and gold to the kind of toothless nature of the buildup, but no incisive attack on the end of it.
But I mean, also, I think too, when you're trying to attack with only three or four players, you know, in one movement going forward, it's really not going to, you know, lend yourself many chances. So while, you know, yes, I was disappointed that I did not see more from Justin Meerham, you know, really engaging in the offense and kind of commanding the game. I honestly can't totally fault the guy because he had so much going against him. You know, he factored in the red card, etc. But it's extremely difficult, you know, given what he had to work with, I think. I think if Higuain was there, you know, it may have changed a little bit more in the chance creation, may have gotten a few more chances, but I don't think it really would have totally changed the game.
It's one of those hypotheticals. It's always impossible to say, oh, this call going this way or this player being there would have changed the game. It's more of a going forward sort of concern for me because we've talked about it many, many times on this show. Who's going to be the guy,
right.
You know, if Federico Higuain's not doing it? You know, it was a bad night all around. The defense did not really cover itself in glory. A lot of blame to go around on the goals, the first goal in particular. Three different players could have really stopped it from being a goal. The cross could have been closed down better. Crenali could have gotten away the first time, and then
totally,
Mensah could have
agree.
Done.
That was
Mensah could have done more. You know.
Yeah, that was one of my big notes, and I think we had maybe in the Slack chat or Twitter, I don't remember, but you know where a lot of people were calling out Crenali because he had a huge blunder on the play, which he did. You know, not negating that, but. It was kind of just a, you know, domino.
It was
effect.
A comedy of errors.
Yeah.
It was a comedy of errors
yeah,
at
think
that point.
Mane
you know?
Was out of position in his defensive block. He was in a high defensive block. He should have been in a mid block. So he tried sprinting back, but at that point it was too late. And then the ball ended up getting outletted to the wing. And Yuka, I think because he was stuck against two guys, he didn't go out to challenge for the cross because. In his mind as a defender, he probably thinks, well, if I step out to him, he's dropping back to the overlap from the right back, Addis, who was at the corner of the box at that point. So
hold on. I want to hold up on you real quick here. Is that the right call for him to make there? Because I didn't get into it. I chose not to engage.
Yeah.
But a fellow crew, air quotes, journalist, took issue with my assigning some blame to Raitala there. Do you think Raitala made the right call there, or should he have closed down better?
I think he should have closed down better. I don't think he should have let that cross in. I think that if he cut the angle out and attacked the defender on the cross with speed, I think that would have been the right choice. First readjusting your angle and then, you know, closing him down with speed, slowing down right before he gets to him. At that point, maybe he gets a cross in, but it's a rushed cross. Instead, he did neither, and he was too passive, and he didn't really put pressure on, and he didn't really close out the other passing lane. So to me, he did the wrong choice. I think he could have done you know, one or two things there, but I don't think he made the right choice.
He kind of chose not to choose and was all the poorer
sure.
for it.
Yeah. And, you know, in the moment, that's a very quick decision making, you
mm-hmm.
know, and he,
mm-hmm.
I think, was just too slow on it. And then we saw the cross come in and, you know, Crenali made a mess of that. I think he fell asleep. And then Jonathan as well went for the clear and totally butchered it.
Yeah, we love Crenali and the Crenali family here at Massive Report. We don't want to throw any undue shade at Alex there.
Sure, yeah. I mean, the week before
he was great.
Yeah, he was MLS Team of the Week, you know, but he's a rookie. He's going to be inconsistent.
Exactly.
It's expected.
Those are the type of plays that happen. A lot of blame to go around on all the goals, really. I don't think Zach Steffen deserves much blame here, though. He was, for me, the lone highlight of the match for Crew SC,
phenomenal.
I think. He has turned
honestly.
Into a legitimate good MLS goalkeeper. Like I was sketchy at the start of the year because he's so young. He's, you know, kind of a diamond in the rough. His first couple games, there were some walkabouts that, you know, made me a little uneasy.
Yeah, I remember
you know, some
that.
Decisions. Yeah.
Yeah.
And as the year's gone on, he's maturing before our eyes at a very, very fast rate. And I guess working with Pat Onstat will do that for you.
For sure,
but
yeah.
But am I crazy for thinking that if this kid stays in the black and gold for, you know, 5, 6, 7 years, he might be the next great in the list, the long list of great Crew SC goalkeepers?
I think at the rate that he is improving, I think he could get to that a lot sooner. And, you know, I'm just being totally honest. I'm not trying to be, you know, super naive in my praise for him. But, you know, I even tweeted out yesterday that one of the big things for me that has really impressed me with his development this season has been his distribution and especially his long passing. He's making pinpoint passes 9 times out of 10, 19 times out of 20, you know, within a 2-foot radius of his target. That's really impressive for a goalie of high caliber, you know, watching goalies like in the Bundesliga that are really, really good at distributing. You know, these guys do that, you know, to that consistency. Maybe they do it at a little bit faster pace, you know, et cetera. I'm not saying he's totally to that level yet, you know, but man, to be playing those type of passes to where we saw earlier in the season and he's spraying passes, you know, 20 yards off his target, that's really, really huge. So it's obvious that this guy's been working his ass off, that Pat Onstad's doing the right things with him. And he's, like you said, really becoming a fine goalkeeper in this league.
Yeah, we're going to have to put a language warning on this now. Thanks, Nate. But overall, what would you say his, you know, we've talked about the growth he's already exhibited. What is his, the area he needs to improve on the most still, like going forward? Where does he need to show the most improvement to kind of take that next step to become one of the MLS All-Stars or even the national team, you know, get in that conversation? Because it's so hard to break into that conversation with the kind of logjam that we've had for the last 4 or 5 years right. in the U.S. national team keeper pool.
I think it's his positioning and with that, his decision-making, which for the most part, you know, I'm no goalkeeper expert. Honestly, it's one of my weaker understandings of the game, you know, just because I've never really been a keeper myself. But yeah, I think his positioning and decision making, which tends to be something that players get by repetitions and by experience. Yeah. It's something that's very, very hard to teach. It comes intuitive to some. You look at like Donnarumma, who's fantastic at it at AC Milan, and he's, I think, 20 years old now.
That kid's kind of wrecking the curve. I mean, he is. That's kind of wrecking the curve for the rest of the mortals.
He totally
is, you know?
But I think for me, his positioning is tremendous. It's like Buffon, almost Buffon level, and this kid's like 20. So, you know, for some people, it comes instinctual like that. And I think Stefan definitely has a good instinct for it, but it's, I would say, the area that he can improve on the most, and just getting more time is going to do that.
We're definitely appealing to our core demographic of 6 Twitter users here who love both Crew SC and Serie A, so this is going to be like an all-time classic episode for them.
Oh, good.
All right, so anything else to add about the kerfluffle in Chester last night, Wednesday night, or are you ready to move on to some MLS news that broke today, Thursday afternoon?
Yeah, let's move on. I don't really know what else to say. I mean, 2 red cards, and you know, I gave you the rundown of what I think, you know, kind of went wrong, but other than that, I
short answer everything
exactly.
So, big news, 2 items of big news, both breaking out of Los Angeles today. Onofo out at the Galaxy, underperforming there. He can't underperform in a big side. Without repercussions, and they roll back the clock and bring in Siggy Schmid, former Crew SC coach, man who's had hit more than his fair share of success in MLS, got some championships to his name. But that was trumped, perhaps, just an hour or two later with the announcement of LAFC's very first head coach, and it will be Bob the Bob Bradley. They did a reveal of him in a tracksuit and ball cap, and their branding is on point, I have to say. Big news coming out of L.A., the coaching carousel claims another. Nate, what are your reactions to this?
Well, I think it's huge for U.S. soccer. We see this year Atlanta United get Tata Martino, you know, one of the best coaches in the world. And then LAFC, I mean, they follow suit, I guess. I mean, Bob Bradley, don't get me wrong, no offense, but isn't to Tata Martinez level. Sorry, Bob, you haven't coached Barcelona. But, you know, Bob Bradley.
But he's still he's got a pedigree. Yeah, totally. He's an internationally renowned, you know. Yeah. He's got that pedigree, and he's got the MLS experience as well.
Yeah, I actually thought he did pretty well at Swansea, and I was sad to see him go. So it was a lot of people around that league. But, you know, so he is a very well-liked coach. He's a coach that is very recognizable to a lot of people that follow the league, that even just kind of platonically follow soccer in this country. He's a name people know, a face people know. Who can forget that bald head? Man, sorry for the Bradley family and their receding hairlines. But, you know, that's huge for LAFC. And then we see the Galaxy tossing out Kurt Anolfo. I knew it was going to happen. I think a lot of people did that follow U.S. soccer. It was a matter of time. The only surprise to me is that I'm surprised it happened this soon.
How long had he been in charge there?
4 months, 5 months maybe.
Oh, wow. Okay, so not even... Oh, I guess since Arena would have left. Yeah, that makes sense.
Well, I guess he was like technically an interim coach
manager,
before that.
Yeah.
So maybe 8 or 9 months.
I want to circle this back around to Crew SC. You know, there is a contingent of Crew fans who are unhappy with the current direction of the team, who are unhappy with... Yes, yes, we're going here, guys. Yeah. We're finally breaking the seal on this conversation, and I didn't tell Nate in advance we were doing it. What does LA Galaxy firing their coach after less than a year because they're underperforming, what does that say, and how does that reflect on a Crew SC organization that, you know, went from the high of contesting MLS Cup on home soil in 2015 to a very disappointing season in 2016, and now on pace for, at best, scraping into the playoffs? You know, should we be drawing any sort of reflections or comparing the two, or are the profiles of the team so different that it's not really a like-for-like comparison?
I don't think it's totally like-for-like for a few reasons, and it's unfortunate, but I think it's the case. You know, LA is a massive market team. You know, they're not even a big market team, whereas Columbus is about the smallest market in the country, unfortunately. So I think that is a huge divide. You have LA, which has long been the team that, you know, is kind of, you know, put up on a pedestal in this league, right? Every new role or new, like, amazing player,
they're the reason we have designated players.
Yeah.
They literally invented a mechanism to send a good player.
Right,
there.
Right.
Like,
yeah, and, you know, we see them getting Jonathan Dos Santos now.
Oh yeah, that kind of got buried in this whole thing.
Yeah,
I
had to bring that one up.
Any other week, that is the lead item on Around MLS for any program, and now it's like at best third. It's crazy.
Yeah. I guess maybe it's third. For me and for a lot of people that follow soccer broadly or even European soccer, it's kind of huge actually. I've had quite a few friends that don't follow MLS, that hate MLS, that just think MLS is total trash. And I've gotten a lot of texts from them saying, Jonathan Dos Santos went to MLS? Like, what? You know, he was a huge player in La Liga. He played for Villarreal and was, like, really, really a focal point to that team.
And product of the Barcelona Academy.
Yeah, totally. And, you know, maybe some American soccer fans don't necessarily realize that, but especially in Spain, like this kid is really well-liked over there. And obviously by the Mexican contingent too. So, you know, that's going to bring, honestly, a lot of supporters to LAFC. It's one of the better acquisitions that they've ever made. Obviously his brother being there has something to do with it.
He went to the Galaxy, not LAFC, right?
Yes. Yeah, he went to the Galaxy.
You said LAFC for a moment. I got real confused that I had just got something wrong.
Sorry.
No.
No. Dos Santos at LA Galaxy. But yeah, so to draw the comparison to Berhalter and the Crew, I don't think it's totally fair. LA is a team that, even if you look at money spent, if you look at, you know, contracts, et cetera, and these players, they spend way more money than Columbus does. And, I would say with that expectation should be higher. I mean, money, you know, sure, it isn't the end all be all in this league. However, a lot of people, like statisticians that, you know, surround the soccer world, use money and salaries actually as a measure for regressing to the mean, you know, if we're talking about this from a statistical standpoint, because it generally correlates over a longer period of time, how much money is spent versus how well, you know, how well you're doing. Now, obviously, there's outliers. You know, Columbus was in the final 2 years ago. So there's outliers like that. So statisticians will look at it and they'll say, all right, well, they're going to regress this mean eventually. Last year, Columbus had a garbage season, right? So there kind of balances out. LA is a team that is supposed to be near the top every year, and money kind of dictates that. And it's just the unfortunate reality of soccer and, you know, how life works, I guess. So for them, you know, they're in, let me see, 19th right now in the league.
Oh, my God.
For them, that's abysmal, right?
That's abysmal for anyone.
Yeah, it's abysmal for anyone. You know, if Crew fans are there, you know, they're crying. But for LA to be there, there's more than just tears from fans. There's also, you know, management, and there's the league.
Garber tears.
Yeah, Garber tears, exactly. So it's very different.
And I want to touch briefly on your financials and statistics. Soccernomics, a great book, highly recommended. Everyone can go out and read it. But I was presented, because I had this conversation with managing editor of Massive Report, Patrick Golden. None of it applies in MLS. It is like the one league that kind of is just totally separate from all the theory in that book because of the stupid stuff like salary caps and designated players and all that jazz. But highly recommend everyone check out that book.
It is a phenomenal book. I've read it more than once. I keep it with me a lot, actually, when I'm writing about soccer, kind of as, you know, a reference. So really great book. Check it out. And I disagree a little bit. It does apply to the league, but the correlation is not as strong, I guess I should say. So not to totally discredit it from applying to MLS. It's becoming more relevant, though, as this league is improving, interesting enough.
So, big news around MLS, and we're going to turn our attention now to Saturday's match, heading out to Sandy, Utah. I don't know if it's just called Sandy because there's a lot of sand, or if there's some story behind that name. I don't know much about Utah. But Crew SC hit the road. It's fair time, so the fray is taken. You've seen a lot of Real Salt Lake this year. I have seen not a lot of Real Salt Lake this year. Something about a printer? I don't know. I wasn't paying attention. He said something about a printer. But what can we expect on the field from Real Salt Lake, printers notwithstanding?
Yeah, I said Mike Pecky, not printer, Chris. Yeah, so expect them to be very, very aggressive. They play a very high line. They like the offsides trap. Their center backs are kind of slow. So that may actually work out in Crew's favor with speedy wingers like Mane and Finley. But they like to press. They like to just kind of play aggressive on both ends of the ball. They take a hell of a lot of shots, too. Watching their past few games, they've just been ramping up. They've been doing really well recently. They just tied Sporting Kansas City at home. 1-1, but you know, considering the first half of the season for them, that's a great draw, really, against one of the best teams in the league. They beat Portland 4-1 in Portland. Chris, you need to go back and watch that match. Well, actually, watch the second half. The first half of the match was painfully boring, and I wanted to never watch soccer again. And I was like, wow, this is why Americans hate soccer. But the second half was full of drama. And Fernando Adi totally lost his mind and decided to just barrel charge Kyle Beckerman. And there were three red cards in the period of 2 minutes. So I think I mentioned in the last podcast, but go back and watch it. And then LA Galaxy, RSL beat in Los Angeles 6-2. So what a way for Cardinalfo to go out, losing to Real Salt Lake 6-2. Before that, RSL wasn't too great. They had some moments of, flashes, I guess, where they looked good, and a few games where they were kind of unlucky. Finishing has been an issue for them. They've averaged, I think, near the most shots in the league. In the past five matches, they've totally blown that away. These guys are shooting the ball 25, 30 times a match. So for Columbus, that's going to be a lot. So we may see a lot of goals here, to be honest.
Yeah, the way you're describing them, it sounds almost like it's going to be a shootout. The very slow defensive back line for Salt Lake is what intrigues me. You mentioned Kakutamane, Ethan Finley, two very pacey wingers. As far as being slow and liking a high line, that sounds like Ola Kamara feast or famine sort of territory here, and hopefully he feasts because he's just so good at getting into those spaces. Do you think that this is a match where Ola might be able to, you know, have a little more opportunity, a little more oomph to the attempts?
Yeah, this is a game where, you know, Ola can really show us what he's made of. I think this defense from RSL has been very consistent. They've been improving a lot. Their pressing scheme is good. But if Columbus, you know, can find a way to break this press, and the traps in midfield too that RSL does are pretty good, because they play such a high line. So how does Columbus respond to that, I think, is a big question, because we've seen it. We saw it against Philly this last match, where Philly gave them a ton of trouble building out of the back. So does RSL present a similar problem? I think so. So if Columbus can break that and Ola can get space, then he could really, really feast on Nick Raimondo.
Knowing what we know about the injuries for Crew SC, we're assuming, you know, we don't have any sort of inside information on this because training's not here in Columbus right now, but we're assuming Higuain remains out. We're assuming Harrison Awful remains out. And obviously now Jonathan Mensah and Lalas Abubakar are both out with suspension. Do you foresee kind of a reversion back to the traditional Berhalter formation just out of necessity here? And if so, or I guess just in general, how do you see this team lining up Saturday?
Yeah, I think that's totally possible. And I'm not sure how it's going to look. I totally believe that Berhalter planned on pulling out the 3-4-2-1, but with two center backs that aren't going to be there, and without Higuain, I have no idea.
We haven't seen Nace in the back three much, have we?
We have not, and unfortunately he's been very inconsistent recently, and he's also been struggling with some injuries to his, I think, calf, mm-hmm. Or ankle. So that may have been, you know, hampering his form too, but...
I just mean even earlier in the season when he was, you know, kind of in favor and healthy, we would primarily see Nace in the kind of traditional two center back formations, because I remember quite clearly it was usually Crenali and Williams kind of joining the back line for the back three. So I don't know if they just don't like his skill set there, or if it's just one of those they like other guys' skill sets better. Yeah, I don't know. Sorry to interrupt.
No, you're fine. And it's possible that they do switch to the back four, but I don't know. I'm trying to think about it. But, you know, Crenali did have some issues this last game. So do you risk it and start him again? And then do you put Williams on the right and Nace on the left and stick with the back three, knowing that you don't have Higuain to play that number 10 role? Or do you drop Crenali and start Nason Williams in the four? Then I don't know, Chris, who do you think would start in the number 10 role if they go back to that 4-2-3-1?
I think you go Merrim and then you go Finley and Mane out wide, or you even go Finley and Merrim out wide and you go to almost a two striker formation up top with Mane being up top. Like,
actually I take all of this back. I take all of that back. I don't think that he will start Merrim in the attacking midfield role, because he's tried it before, and I don't think Berhalter likes it, or else I think we would see it more, especially when Higuain was out. Do you think that we see Artur playing the number 10 role?
I hope not, because the one time he was tasked with that, I want to say it was against Bridgeview in Bridgeview earlier in the season when they played Abu. They played Abu, Trap, and then Artur kind of in a triangle. God, that was just bad. Nobody knew what they were supposed to be doing. You know, it was a lot of confusion.
It was bad, but I have such a strong gut feeling that that's what we're going to see.
Man, this isn't a knock, just
based on availability, you know?
This isn't a knock on Artur or his skill set, because I'm on record as having come around hardcore on the guy. But the one time we saw something like this, it was such a disaster that I can't get behind this idea, because I think it just
saying I get behind it either. I'm not saying I even like it, because I don't. But I'm saying it's a real possibility. I don't know. Well, it's hard to guess what to expect, because
what are we more accurate on? Our predictions for the scores or our predictions for Berhalter's lineup?
Scores, at least for me. I'd say my score predictions have been pretty good. Like last
you have actually.
This midweek match, I predicted Crew was going to lose 2-0.
You were close.
I was pretty close. Nobody else said MR even said Crew was going to lose. So I feel pretty confident, oddly enough, in my predictions for scores. Lineups, I have no idea.
Throw 11 pieces of paper up in the air and see what falls.
That sounds about right.
All right, so we've kind of gone over both the offensive and defensive struggles for matchups, I guess, not necessarily struggles, but the questions this RSL team poses. For those out there like me who haven't seen RSL too much, who is kind of the key cog for them offensively that needs to be watched?
Well, the most interesting one that Crew SC may have a little bit of trouble dealing with is Luis Silva playing up top in the false nine. Mike Pecky seems to prefer him over Yuri Movsisian. And even though Movsisian has 6 goals, which is the most for the team, Pecky doesn't seem too high on playing him, and I actually kind of support that. I know members in the media have kind of gone against Pecky, saying that, Yura's, you know, it's been proven that he can score, and he comes in as a substitute. Yeah, but it's what you do in between. And even if you look at, like, Opta match ratings, Yura's really, really low. I think, like, right around a 6, which for somebody who's started so many games is not very good, whereas Luis Silva has come in and played the last 2 games and has been phenomenal. He was player of the match against Sporting Kansas City. So he plays this false nine role where he's going to drop off the true striker, and he will join in midfield, and it's very easy to lose him. So especially if Columbus goes with 3 men in the back, who are these 3 guys going to mark? Because you have a lot of runners coming in. They have Albert Ruznak, who's kind of been the guy who pulls the strings for RSL. He's the most creative player on their team. Very, very good at free kicks. And RSL is actually very good in the air because of their height, particularly from their slow center backs. So free kicks and corners are something to watch out for. But Ruznak kind of pulls the strings in the middle. Plata on the left wing, and then on the right wing, Jefferson Savarino, a young DP for RSL. They've both been pretty dynamic, also pretty inconsistent. Neither of them can shoot the ball, but they've really, really given a lot of defenses hassle. So basically what I'm getting to is that it's a very dynamic offense. There's not like one person that they're really at the solo in on, but it's that false nine that could present some issues, because you don't see that a lot in this league.
No, you don't.
And especially young guys like Crenali, well, you know, it's an age-old question, right? This has been a debate for 30-some years. Do you step out to the false nine and mark him, or do you stay back on your line? So how does Crenali deal with that? That's what I have to bring up. So that I guess leads back into my feeling that we may see a 4 in the back.
Yeah, it's one of those things that just causes so much havoc, a false nine, as like you said, in a league like MLS where we don't ever see it. So all things considered, how do you see this one shaking out?
You know, I actually haven't really thought about that. I definitely see it being high scoring and RSL being the home team. You know, I have to grant favor to them for that. And because of their high pressure, their press, their aggressive shot heavy offense, you know, Stefan, I don't think, has ever faced like 30 shots in a game. I guess the Philly match was kind of close. Granted, you're down two men. Mm-hmm. But RSL just presents a lot of issues for Columbus. And again, I don't really like it. So I'm going to say, crazy prediction here, but 4-2 for RSL.
Well, I don't know much about RSL, so I was just going to go with what you said, but I can't bring myself to get that crazy. I'm going to go 3-1 RSL and just ride your coattails a little here. So anything else you want to add before we wrap this up for the week?
No, sir.
All right, well, we want to take the time to once again thank our fine sponsors at the Land Grant Brewing Company over in Franklinton. They have their brand new One Goal, One Ride Rye IPA out. It benefits Pelotonia, great beer for a great cause, and our good friends over at the Old North Arcade. Like I said, keep your eyes peeled to their Facebook page for all the details about their upcoming second expansion. Over on the Monday show, Bart likes to use the hashtag Dope Porch. I'm not up with the kids, so I don't know what that means, but I assume there'll be more doping of the porch coming after the expansion. Thank you all for joining us. We appreciate you listening. If you have questions, concerns, send them into us. I am at Chris Landis, K-R-I-S-L-A-N-D-I-S, on the Twitter machine. He is at Glory2Columbus, or you can just yell at all of us here at MR. Take your pick at Massive Report. If you guys have any comments, questions, concerns, tell us to talk less international football, whatever. Let us know. And above all else, stay massive.
Oh, and speaking of shout outs, Fat Boy Jordan Morris, the hero.
I have no idea what we're talking about.
Jordan Morris, the match last night.
Boy Detective. That's a shout out. That's a shout out to Matt Gosher.
Did you not watch the Gold Cup final?
I did watch the Gold Cup final. We're going, this is just, I'm going to click stop now.
God damn it.
Stay massive, everybody.